supposedly, it's springtime here in New York City. But I beg to differ. I don't know what's more screwy today. The fact that it's 30 degrees, or the fact that they're going to vote to repeal and replace Obamacare. I don't know. It's a toss-up. But I have more confidence in Mother Nature coming through than I do in Congress. That's a sad thing. Human beings, you think you can control them. Mother Nature, probably going to be the one who shines bright day in and day out. My name is Mark Farrell. The show is Insight on the Progressive Radio Network. Thanks for joining me every Thursday, this time. Of course, Gary Noel follows me at noon. Man, does he have a great show in store for you. Sizzling, compelling, riveting topics coming your way. So, I feel really good today, as you can tell, because it's my secret ingredient pizza that I made last night. I discovered that I can buy pizza dough from the local pizza restaurant and make it myself. It's already made the dough, but I make the sauce from scratch, the toppings, everything, and the kids love it. And it comes out really good. And after all those years of working in an Italian restaurant when I was young, washing dishes, I'm really good at actually making the pizza with my fists, keeping my thumbs tucked in. I can't throw it up in the air. But anyway, it's really good. So I had a good and full belly in me last night when I went to go bowling. Yeah, I know bowling. No, I'm not 80 years old. That's the same thing I thought when my friend said to me, do you want to bowl? I said, no, I'm not 80 years old. He's like, no, it's pretty cool. Anyway, I did it a year ago, and it was okay. Actually, I was kind of bored out of my mind. And believe it or not, we actually won first place. And then this year I got called in as a sub because my best friend Joe Marcario has an injury. Long story short, I got drawn back in. So I still suck. But my handicap is so, you know, low or high. I don't know how that goes. So last night I bowled 130, and I did some incredible stuff. Like there's two pins. I don't even know what the numbers are. On a far left and far right, I aim for the one on the far left, hoping in my wildest dreams it would nick it and skid across the oak and hit the one on the right. And it did! The place went pure pandemonium. All the guys are like, oh, yeah. You know, all the 80-year-old guys with their walkers. Anyway, it's a bunch of a good group of people. And I bring this up because not to brag about my 130 score last night. Oh, my God, 130. Good for me. Because being visually impaired, you know, this, I don't know where I don't know the number of the pins. I can't see which one's ahead of the other one if, you know, you don't knock them all down on a first strike. So it's kind of interesting and a lesson for us all to, you know, just so what if you can't see or if you're not strong enough, or you don't think you're smart enough to do something. But if something kind of calls your name, you know, don't let it stop you. Just do it. Just go out there and do it. Like I spoke about this about 2 years ago when I was on the air here about playing softball. As a pitcher, I always wanted to play softball. I couldn't play baseball. Well, I did as a very young kid out in center field. Vision appeared. I'd hear crack. I hear a thud. And they're like, run backwards. No. Run to your right. No, your other right. And I'd find the ball eventually, and they'd get an infield home run. So I had very traumatic experiences as a kid playing Little League. But anyway, so my friend said, hey, do you want to play softball? This is 2 years ago again. I said, I don't know if I can play. He knows my background, my visual impairment. So I said, listen, let me just come over to your house before I try a practice. Let me just toss the ball. And I said, ironically as this sounds, I'm really good at placing the ball where it needs to be. Excuse me. He said, sure, come on over. So I did it. He's like, man, you're spot on. You can totally pitch. I'm like, great. This is unbelievable. But the scary part about pitching is that you actually have to be throwing the ball back. And that was the scariest part of me. So the funniest part about this is the first game I started, and I think I pitched the whole game, I could hardly remember many of the events. I was so nervous about the ball being thrown to me from the catcher. And having actually the second game, I got whizzed right in the cheek with a ball. And they were going to make special allocations for me, put a screen in front of me or net. And I was like, no. I just, like our guest you're going to meet in a few minutes, Shannon Ryan, who's an incredible grad student making incredible films. She has multiple disabilities. And she, too, likes to carve her own niche in life and doesn't want special treatment. And we're going to find out about Shannon in a few minutes after she gets more comfortable, warms up from this incredibly cold New York City day, and finishes her nice, warm, steamy Dunkin' Donuts tea. I didn't get her any munchkins, though, because I wasn't sure of her diet taste. Because I'm a pizzatarian, so I don't know if she's a donutarian. So anyway, I digress. So that's the deal. So try things that are outside your comfort zone, because it's just really important to do something really, really different. So with my high score of 130 last night and that incredible feat that I did from knocking one pin from the far left to the right, I walked out of there feeling pretty good. So consequently, today, with little sleep and eating half a power bar about 2 seconds before I came on the air, I'm bouncing off the wall. So I apologize in advance. So it's pretty cool that, you know, all things are advancing in life. Sometimes not as fast as we like technology, obviously the things that we don't like to advance, like taxes and gas prices and all that stuff, obviously go up much faster, and minimum wage we would like to have increased. But a lot of things just don't progress as fast as we want. But there are other things that take a little time to build. And this is the reason why Sesame Street is doing something really, really interesting. They have finally realized the importance of, and over a decade they've been working on this, of adding a new puppet, and we'll call that a Muppet, to the block. And it's not J-Lo either, not J-Lo on the block, Muppet. But actually, that would be a pretty good spinoff. Maybe that would be an SNL spinoff. So after a decade, Julia, a young Muppet on the autism spectrum, will make her appearance on Sesame Street. And here's a sample.
Hey, Julia, you want to play a game?
Play a game?
Oh, great. How about we play tag?
Play tag. Play tag.
Wow, I can tell you're really excited. You're bouncing up and down like a rubber ball. Boing, boing, boing.
Boing, 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 boing.
Okay, so let's start playing, okay?
So for years, families of children with autism have asked to address this issue because obviously it's so ubiquitous. To use their expertise and characters to build a bridge between the autism and neurotypical communities. So Dr. Jeanette Borincott, SVP of U.S. Social Impact Sesame Street Workshop, how's that for a title, has ponied up. So many parents, she says, advisors and organizations have contributed to the success of this initiative, and they want and are thrilled to have the benefit of this collaboration as we launch this new and latest chapter. So in 2015, Sesame Workshop launched Sesame Street and Autism See Amazing in All Children, which is a great concept because, I mean, it's so prevalent nowadays to have Muppets and characters on Sesame Street with disabilities is very, very significant. There are characters that make, I don't watch the show all the time. I used to when my kids were a little bit younger. There are some kids with some obvious disabilities, which is great. And we're seeing that in primetime television commercials with adults as well. I think there's a Swiffer commercial that came out about a year and a half ago with a father who's trying to dust a ceiling fan with a maybe a below the arm amputee. And it's not about his disability at all. It's about Swiffer. But obviously it's inclusive, and that's what we like. So this online initiative, which introduced Julia on a digital character storybook called We Are Amazing, 1, 2, 3, Sesame Workshop has spent 5 years consulting with 250 organizations and experts within the autism community, including Autism Speaks and Autism Society of America. So it's pretty cool. You know, autism is very rampant. We probably all know somebody within 2 or 3 degrees of separation, unfortunately, that have been touched or are touched with autism. Now, Julia, the newest character, will be played by Stacey Gordon, which is kind of neat because she's a puppeteer whose son is on the autism spectrum. And she says, I really wish that kids in my son's class had grown up with a Sesame Street that had modeling of this behavior of inclusion of characters with autism. So very, very cool. Julia will be making her debut April 10th on PBS, Kids, and HBO. So look for that. So big applause for Sesame Street and HBO for, I'm just surprised actually that, Sesame Street is a great, great franchise that they have, you know, a lot of respect and a lot of research goes into things. I'm just surprised that it's actually taken this long to get Julia on a full-time show in terms of just the online aspect. Because, you know, it's very, very important that things be reflective of their listenership. And certainly parents are sitting there with their kids with a disability going like, maybe the kids are saying, well, how come no one looks like me or talks like me or sings like me, like Julie, et cetera. So that's changed. And I'm glad it's, you know, it's taken a little while, but nonetheless, it's here. So we applaud that. And speaking of childhood, like one of my, I have a lot of things that I really dug as a kid in terms of watching TV. I remember, the 4:30, I think it was called the afternoon movie. Dun, 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 I know there's a lot of kids in the studio here, a little bit too young to hear that. That was very cool. One of the shows I still hold near and dear and close to my heart is The Gong Show. And we lost the great Gong Show creator, songwriter, and novelist Chuck Barris the other day. And here's a little sample of Chuck.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, one of the girls in this next act says her hobbies are boys and first aid. I guess that means that on weekends, she cruises Hollywood Boulevard in an ambulance.
So, you know, Chuck always has
Thanks
some
a
shtick.
Lot, Mark.
Oh, you're welcome, Chuck.
Here she is.
So he always had some great shtick. And you know what? It was... He appealed to a certain niche, and in the beginning, the ratings weren't that good. And this is really the first real reality show. And at one point in the daytime, I think he was ranking in 78% of daytime TV. 78% of the audience. That is gargantuan. That will not happen, I think, can ever be replicated, unless it's something like the Super Bowl, something like that. But in terms of a show of that caliber, a TV show, a game show. So he created The Dating Game. That was his first show. He got into TV, and he was bouncing around a lot in his younger age, college graduate. Smart guy. And then he came up with The Newlywed Game. And I have a great, vivid memory of The Newlywed Game. So The Newlywed Game was kind of like it sounds like. A couple that's been married, I don't know what the standard was, maybe just a handful of years, 2 years or so. And one couple, the male or female would be asked a question. And then in secrecy, not that the audience could see. And then the male or female, wife or husband, would be asked the same question. And they would hopefully have the same answer. So at this particular question, the question was asked to the husband, where was the most unusual place you made love? Again, the question posed by the host. I forget the name of the host. He was a great host as well, but it wasn't Chuck Barris. The question posed to the host was, where was the most unusual place you made love? And the husband thought about, and I think he said, to the best of my recollection, because it pales in comparison to what the wife said, I think he said a Chase lounge or something like that. You know, maybe outside, you know, feeling a little, you know, risky, you know, experimental, whatever. And so when the wife said, okay, we asked your husband, where's the most unusual place you made love? This was her response. In the butt. In the butt. Isn't that great? I love it. In the butt. So, I mean, this is what, 25 years ago? Easily, maybe 30 years ago. And I still remember that. Because I think the faces on everybody were incredibly just blanked, surprised. And even the husband's like, oh my God, first of all, it was revealed. Well, maybe she may not even be referring to her husband when she said in the butt, which is even more probably case for a very heated exchange after the segment aired. But I thought that was hilarious. So The Newlywed Game will always go down in history. As a matter of fact, I should have asked you, our new producer, to find that particular clip, because I'm sure it exists. So actually, if you can find it, because that would be something I would love to end the show on. So The Gong Show, you know, created by Chuck Barris, had two episodes, actually, a daytime and a prime time, and it did extremely well. It was very, very impressive. You know, it was sticky, and it had celebrity judges that would come on, and so somebody would come on. Chuck Barris, as you heard, would introduce somebody, and they'd come on with some ridiculous act. Once in a while, you had somebody who was really good, and they would not get gonged, and then Chuck Barris would do some shticks, and he always had a hat on and kind of like nervous act, but that was his whole thing, like circus vaudevillism. And it is very, very effective. And, you know, I applaud the guy for really doing something that he loved. But actually, what he loved more than TV was writing. He wrote a few books. I think two of them were quite successful. So do yourself a favor. Google him and check it out, because it's just a person who's going to be missed. I read, actually, Jesse, our program director, just told me he's worth a great deal of change. So good for him and his estate for obviously raking in a lot of money, because he contributed to a great deal of TV history. And Chuck Barris, have a great time wherever you end up, my friend. And hopefully you don't get gonged, that's for sure. So listen, really quick, I want to mention something before we meet our very, very lovely guest, Shannon Ryan, who's doing great things in school as a grad student. Hopefully is going to be up there with all the great movie directors and screen. Oh, look at her. Oh, she's got her thumbs up. Yes, she's psyched. She's ready for it. But I want to mention to you something very, very significant. The Supreme Court ruled yesterday that schools must provide more opportunities for students with disability. This is gargantuan. So yesterday, the Supreme Court ruled unanimously in favor of higher educational standards for children with a disability in one of the most important education cases in decades. So there are roughly 6.4 million students with disabilities between ages 3 to 21. And roughly 13% of all American students are students with disabilities. That's a big number, making this case important for a wide group of students. So there is a lot of information here that I want to talk about in length. I just read about this last night because, again, the decision was just yesterday. So I want to suss through this material, but I do want to read you one more excerpt because this is pretty daunting. And I'm sorry to throw a lot of numbers at you quickly, but you can kind of gauge the Herculean effort it was to pass something of this size. So each year, nearly 400,000 kids with disabilities leave school. 400,000 kids with disabilities leave school. Wow. That's almost 40% without a high school degree. Only 65% of students with disabilities complete high school, which is a key, obviously, contributor to leading to just 1 in 3 Americans with disabilities having a job, which is, you know, another thing that is a major issue, that kids graduate high school. And then what's next? It becomes like a major plateau in her life. And that's where things really need to be created, opportunities. But with this reform, hopefully that's not the case. So it causes many people with disabilities to live a life of poverty with that high number. So, and also they talk about invisible disabilities can be just as lifelong affecting as visible disabilities. Individuals with disabilities are also largely underrepresented in higher education. There are 1.2 million people with disabilities age 16 to 20 in the U.S., among people age 25 and older in 2014. So a lot of numbers there. I hope they made sense to you. But again, this is gargantuan news that the Supreme Court ruled schools must provide more opportunities for students with disabilities. And I love that. I applaud the Supremes for that because that is one hell of a move. Because as you're going to hear from our guest in a moment or two, she's not alone with her struggles when she was in school. In her elementary, primary, elementary, high school, undergraduate. I'm sure she has her struggles in her graduate program right now. Myself, I certainly had very, very high hurdles to climb in all my education process, all through college as well. As a matter of fact, even every semester I would have to go up, and I dreaded this. I would go up to each professor after every new class the first day and say, hi, my name's Mark. Oh, hi, Mark. How are you? Oh, great. Thank you. I look forward to learning, blah, 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 blah. Just wanted to inform you that I have a visual impairment and that sometimes I may need longer time to take a test or a larger print or things of that material. And many times in my 4 years of college, it's not six, as many people read. No, I didn't drink 2 extra years to stay on campus or to be. No. Okay. Well, that'll be in my book. Not now. Okay. So some of the professors would say to me, "You don't look blind." So these are highly educated people. And I would stand there sometimes fully body locked because as a freshman, you know, you're in a whole new world. You're totally removed from your comfort zone. And then I certainly obviously grew up very quickly, as many of us do in college. That's one of the points of going to college, not even just to broaden the mind, but just become an adult on many levels. And so I was just dumbfounded. And I reported a person or two, but I like to deal with it in my own manner because having parents that were of strong will and content and high ethics and morals, they built a son. Yeah, they built me out of wood and mortar to withstand that. So I'm very happy that by way of Michelle Spitz, a friend of the show, has brought to me the show Shannon Ryan. Shannon is a first-year grad student at Brookings Center's Barry R. Feinstein Graduate School of Cinema. She has Coughlin-Lowry syndrome, a rare genetic disorder that has caused partial hearing loss and other developmental issues. She is also visually impaired as well as hearing impaired. And meeting her 15 minutes ago, I would have never known. Shannon Ryan, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
How are you, my dear?
I'm good. How about yourself?
Fantastic. Fantastic. So, you know, you had 16 surgeries, 16, 1616, before the age of 11. And here you are at age 27, just flourishing beyond belief.
It is quite the accomplishment.
Did you ever imagine watching all those movies in a hospital, which gave you so much vision, determination, and I guess fortitude, and knowing that there is more to life than just laying in a hospital bed, because you had the, I guess you were prematurely, rightfully so then though, almost making movies in your mind about maybe how your own life is going to turn out, because you're not going to reside and live in this bed forever.
To be completely honest with you, I actually, most of my operations were very much, my recoveries were in the span of just a couple of days. I would say that I've only really spent maybe two nights of my life in the hospital for two particular surgeries. And film, honestly, it's been really my lifelong dream. It's funny, you were talking about Sesame Street before, because my first word was weirdly Grover. And my first memory, which is ironic since of the release with Remake last week, my first memory is seeing Beauty and the Beast in the theater when I was
Fantastic.
2 years old with my mom. And as I got older, I just always had an active imagination. I was never really athletically inclined. And as a result, hated sports. Just learned early on that I was bad at them, did not want to play them because I didn't want to mortify and embarrass myself in front of my friends. So I gravitated towards make-believe and...
Make-believe. You can't gloss over that, because make-believe is an art form in itself.
It is. It really is. And honestly, I imagined, reflecting on it just now, it kind of all came together at a head, I would say, when I started school, when I was about like first, second grade, my teacher started noticing that I was actually a really incredible writer. And
that young of an age?
That young.
Really?
Definitely. And I'm sure I was just writing like those little silly prompts about like the day we got to take
That's
a stuffed
okay.
animal to
it
school.
Shows, it shows incredible promise.
Definitely. And I guess you can say that it had given me encouragement. And honestly, I think my parents were always supportive of me. They understood that at a young age, I had all these dreams and ambitions. And also, they just wanted really healthy and happy children, both my younger brother and myself, that they took me to every specialist. I was in probably almost every therapy imaginable. And in the end, it paid off with their persistence and the persistence that they instilled in me. I would say that, you know, for me personally, like going to college and in having a career in something I actually want to pursue or would like to have a career in, never felt like a possibility. It was more so the fact that people around me, particularly teachers and specialists, and this actually began like long before I was even aware of it when I was four, a principal actually told my mother, they saw that I was struggling with little silly things. My mom used to put me in dresses, so I would struggle, like they had this large like spirally staircase or something, and I would struggle going up the stairs, and they saw a problem. And that principal told my mother.
They saw a liability. That's what they saw.
They saw a liability. And he said, and this is actually a quote, that he saw me being in a mental institution someday. Kid
and
you not.
That's where he's probably located right now. We hope.
Who knows? But weirdly enough, my mother's attitude, and it's the same one she raised me with, was very much, oh, you do not know what you just did, really.
Yes, exactly.
And as I grew up, and we would try to get my IEPs every year when I was growing up in high school and junior school, and even now, really, with the very limited career that I've had. I've had good and bad experiences, of course. Honestly, anyone who tells me that I can't do something, and a lot of this just becomes is because I've always had a passion and a goal for film and for the film industry, it's only inspired me to put myself.
They light your fuse. Get out of my way. Here I go. Here comes Shannon Ryan. I'm going to propel myself right past you.
Exactly.
Good for you. Good for you. And that's outstanding. I mean, at a young age that you obviously were able to latch on to something. You know, nothing is better than TV and film and the arts in general as a form of escapism, whether you have a disability or not, because we all have, even when we have great childhoods, it's always about dreaming. And what you initially said before about how did you so eloquently put that in terms of make-believe land?
Gravitating towards make-believe and storytelling.
So it's great, and it's paid off because obviously you're a phenomenal writer, and writing is your first love, correct?
I consider myself a storyteller first and foremost. I have always loved every aspect of film and been interested in every aspect of film. But at the end of the day, you were talking about just before about advocacy and accommodations in schools, especially elementary, junior, and high schools. And the only reason I'm convinced that I've gotten as far as I have is because I had this goal and this passion at such a young age and really just wanted to continue to flourish it and let it go, really.
Well said. And it's further testament to the fact that when I speak to audiences about overcoming adversity, about all the things that not only my visual impairment that I have overcome different variables in my life, people are always like dumbfounded. How could you have survived X, Y, and Z? And what people don't understand, and I get it to a certain degree, that if you don't have a disability, you look to the disability community and are like, how do you exist, get through the day? And it's much easier when you have some form of disability to understand, because it makes you so much more creative, so much more resilient, like off the charts resilient than able-bodied persons. And you're a lot more capable and adept to handle arduous situations better.
Definitely. I think this also definitely helped for me, and I hope it helps for any of your listeners out there, and I'm sure it's been the case for you too. Having a good role model helps a lot. For me, my mother was really always going out of her way to help me in any form she could, even if it meant risking her own reputation. And she would gladly do the same thing for my younger brother, who is entirely gifted and does not have a disability. Also, I think it would be a lot easier for children growing up now, way more than it was when I was growing up back in the 90s. But part of
Way back in the 90s,
early 1991. For me personally, the reason I say I'm a storyteller first and stories are the heart and soul for me is really it was the characters that I was watching and the journeys they would overcome were very much my role models and filled the place. I, as much as I give my mother a lot of credit for being an early role model for me and certain mentors that I've had as well, I really had to latch on to historical figures and fictional characters, really, to kind of see, like, this is what you could do if you could aspire to it, because I did not really know anyone with a similar disability as I did who had ambitions the size of, and a wish list, really, the size of the Nile.
And multiple disabilities.
Definitely.
But that didn't stop you in high school from picking up a camera and forming a script and doing movie shorts.
I did pretty okay. Honestly, I was 14 years old when I wrote my first script. And I
was 16, so I'm a late bloomer. Just kidding.
Nice. And I did pretty okay. I had won a playwriting competition when I was in about fifth grade, so I had some knowledge of like that sort of structure and had been writing stories for years. And just one day decided I want to write a screenplay. Coerced my mother into buying me like the only screenwriting Bible that we could find about formatting, and just really during lunch breaks, study halls, whatnot, after school, whatnot, typed up 100 pages and realized that I was in love with it. And really, by the time I got to high school, beyond then, it was just like, I love this. I want to continue doing this.
Did your high school have a program?
My high school had film classes. They didn't. They were more on the theater end of things. Mm-hmm. So I did from junior high on, and this actually started way back when I was in elementary school, too. I was immersed in theater for a while there. I did the spring musicals every year. My claim to fame by the time I graduated, and this is actually more of a compliment than it is going to sound, was that I played the cow in Into the Woods Junior when I was in seventh grade. And
you're right about the setup.
Yes. And
do you have a picture of that we can post?
I can somewhere send in you York one.
And you're not going to. I know you're not. Oh, yeah, Mark, I'll send it to you. It's never going to happen.
Which, by the way, if anyone's listening out there and happens to have a copy of the performance, I'm kind of going with all my fellow theater MJS people out there or who may be listening to this, if they follow my Facebook at all these days. If you could please send me a copy of my death scene, that would be amazing.
Fantastic. We look forward to that, and we will repost it here. And actually, you hail not too far from New York City here, Morristown, New Jersey.
I do.
Where, unfortunately, people who have disabilities and able-bodied people are bullied, too. And
yes.
And you were no exception.
In third grade, actually, I would say let me get back up a little. The first time that I personally realized, I had known all along that I was different, but the first time I ever realized I was going to be receiving different treatment was when a teacher allowed it and really encouraged classmates to skip me while we were playing telephone. And that, over the course of the year, when I was nine, by the way, escalated into death threats and almost severe hazing. Like, I don't remember exactly if I did anything to deserve this or if it was just a fluke and something someone felt like they were doing, wanted to do. But the day after one of my operations when I was back at school, someone actually threw peanut butter in my hair. And my mom found out and was completely
enraged.
Completely enraged. Mm. And my teacher, who was gone by the next year, by the way, didn't even think about it. Like, she didn't see a problem with it.
When I hear stories like that, I have to pause and think about what I want to really say versus what I can say. It's unthinkable. It's unfathomable on so many levels. But the only upside, the silver lining, is that it's made you the person that you are.
Definitely.
All the people who said that you couldn't do things and you did those great movies in high school, you went to, you got your undergrad, and now you have your master's program. And it doesn't stop there. The BAFTA New York Media Studies Scholarship Program supports students pursuing media studies at graduate level institutions within the New York City area and is now in its fifth year. And you are the recipient of the Woman of Her Word, Michelle Spitz Scholarship. And that was awarded to you how long ago?
I found out back in December that I was the recipient, and I am still over the moon and this is the first time I've actually gotten any sort of validation for all my efforts, especially recognition by the film industry beyond my alma mater and obviously getting into grad school, plus all the previous internships and freelance positions that I've had in the industry up till now. And I consider Michelle really to be my fairy godmother in a sense.
It's nice also that I believe last week she was in New York City here for the Real Abilities Film Festival, which we had Isaac Zablocki on to talk about that, the co-founder of the festival, which is an incredible film festival about persons with disabilities here in New Jersey and also in L.A. And she accompanied you to one of the evenings. And obviously she serves as a role model. Obviously, her scholarship is a great component because it has a financial variable to it. It has also perks in terms of having a mentor in the business and many other aspects of the BAFTA organization that provides. And that's incredible because, you're a trailblazer, my dear, and you're going to keep going. So this is just more fuel to maybe get you going sooner than later.
The fact that this scholarship exists actually alone, whether I had received it or not, is a huge comfort to me. If something like this had been offered years ago, I'm sure I would have loved even the possibility of something like this ever happening. I see a tremendous amount of responsibility in terms of actually delivering on that promise. Probably because of my experiences, like I've said, I've had both good and bad teachers, good and bad experiences in the workplace, especially the entertainment industry, but that's a story for another time. I have always kind of had the urge to want to foster more advocacy and definitely touch on a lot of those issues that we don't always see on the screen. And now because of this scholarship, and since it's actually more easier than it was way back when I was 18, I actually am been inspired even more so to deliver on that.
You should. And also because you were, you know, what a great enriching experience after your undergrad. You went out to Los Angeles, and I believe one or two different great movie production houses were courting you, and you had a great internship. Tell us about that.
It was a terrific experience. I was actually working at four production companies at the
four.
Time. Four. It was really funny. Like, one ended right around the time the other started. So I was at a company Monday through Friday, really, reading scripts, doing something called script coverage, which is sort of like a book report meets a critique. I got to attend in meetings, really, where we would just talk about all these various scripts that were in consideration and just listen to conversations about everything from casting and insurance. More fun than it sounded, one of my projects at one of those companies, they had me organize their legal files, and that was eye-opening. I got to attend a script read-through, do research on all these various crazy topics. Most of the companies that I was working with were more scripted film, but I had to do research for at least one in documentary, a docuseries, which was pretty awesome.
So Shannon and Ryan, I imagine this crystallized your goal and pursuit for this industry once you were working out there for four different major production companies.
After I would say I had been there about 5 months. I had my internships for a very long time. I don't think there was any going back after just interning for 5 months. I had always had the bug, and probably had the bug more than I ever did.
So what was the impetus to come back east? I mean, you're from this area, the New York City area, New York, New Jersey, Tri-City area. Obviously, graduate school was probably always lurking in the back of your mind. Were you tempted to stay out west and, you know, follow, obviously, the path of, you know, countless hundreds of thousands of people who wanted to also pursue the arts in the same capacity that you have or were doing, and the fact that you had your foot in the door in so many different, you know, highly respectable organizations?
Despite that, film business is really weird, actually.
Newsflash.
So much of getting your foot in the door and actually being able to go from opportunity to opportunity has to do with contacts, who you know, job performance, and so on and so forth. I was out in L.A. during a very weird time, right before the tax credits were made to bring filmmaking back to the state. So there actually was a lot more limited opportunity there than I would have expected, despite the fact that I had heard that it was going to be difficult. I was fortunate when I was out there. I had amazing professors at Columbia College Chicago, my alma mater, and amazing mentors during my internships who may have saw that I struggled with like answering landline phones, but understood with my script analysis and other roles they did.
You more than made up for it.
Definitely, that I could compromise for that, which was great. But nothing was really leading anywhere. And I found this incredible internship in the executive services department as Tribeca, which is what brought me back initially. I've been here ever since. I joke, honestly, with all my friends and my family that I left L.A. without mentally being ready to leave L.A. I still very much would like to go out there and live there again at some point of my life and actually get it out of my system. It was after my internship at Tribeca where things actually started getting very difficult before I even considered coming to grad school.
In what way?
Honestly, first time where I was dealing with employers that were not accommodating of my disability, I would say it was like high school, magnetized 100 times. They say don't bite the hand that feeds you, so I'm not going to mention names, but at least one corporation that I worked for wouldn't put me on a position where I was to answer phones. I struggled, and I found out that equipment that I did not know existed before had just emerged that could be of asset to me.
Oh, I'm sure.
They did not even give me the time of day to even prove that that equipment could work, which was really heartbreaking since I had always been, especially when I was growing up, especially in high school, I don't want to say that I downplayed my disability, but I struggled to downplay it and then had all these amazing experiences in college and Los Angeles where I came into my own and I was really, because of those relationships.
Sure. Yeah. And you sort of, assimilated.
Definitely. I was
smart. Made things work the best you could because you're the resilient and problem-solving person that you are. I don't want to get too much into this, but did you bring this to the attention of HR to say, listen, I need an accommodation?
I had tried. Unfortunately, my boss had kind of beat me to the punch, which was really heartbreaking after spending all that time, about 5 years, coming into my own, growing confident and not feeling any shame in my disability and feeling like I don't have to pretend to be a normal person. I could just be myself. And it was incredibly, incredibly heartbreaking.
Well, you know what? It's like a writer and poets and comics. In the end, it's painful when you're experiencing it, and when you're in the thick of it, you just want to get to the other end of it. But this is going to be great material for you when you are writing feature-length films, et cetera, documentaries, whether it's on yourself, your real life, or other people, or whatever the degree or level it is. And so, it sucks to have to experience something of that nature, and I have experienced it as well. And I'm sure down the road I will certainly experience more of that as well. But certainly, we've grown into our own. I'm much older than you are. I know how to handle these situations, and you too as well. And before I want to get into something else, that I just want to compliment you because, you have an invisible disability, just like myself. I have a visual impairment. I don't bump into walls. It's not incredibly apparent that I have a disability. You as well. You wear dual hearing aids. And visually, what's the name of your visual impairment?
My mom actually corrected me. I don't have a condition exactly. One of my eyes was set higher than the other. So when I was in third grade, I had an operation to drop the eyeball. Yet, because of that, I can still see much better in my left eye than I can in the right eye, which was the one that was dropped.
Okay. That's the name of one of your movies, Drop the Eyeball.
I will keep that in mind. It does have
it has a great
title.
Ring to it, doesn't it?
It does.
My name is Mark Farrell. The show is Insight on Progressive Radio Network. I'm pleased that Shannon Ryan is my guest today. She's a graduate student and a budding filmmaker. And I doubt that in no way, shape, or form that nothing is going to hold you back, including when you were in high school. After Hurricane Katrina wreaked havoc on New Orleans, that you went down there. Here's a woman at what age? 16, 15?
I was about 17.
17 years of age, going down to a place that I'm sure was far from safe, but is something that tugged at your heart. And you went down there, and it's not like you did PR or maybe was shooting a documentary, et cetera. You were in there doing kind of like demoing, pulling screws out of the wall and whatever you could to contribute. That says volumes about you.
It was shocking to everyone I knew, including myself, considering my my dedication to do anything that was athletically inclined. Or it required some level of athletic activity. And yet, it was completely humbling and amazing. I think I astonished myself in terms of my physical ability, being able to lift floorboards, let alone the fact that I could actually use the back of a hammer, two nail screws out of the wall. And just being down there and seeing, we were in the third ward, so you really were seeing the poverty and the level of damage. I remember just watching the plaster be peeled off the walls. We were just like breaking apart tiles and just seeing all that foundation come down and feeling like a pang in my heart, really. And my group was fortunate that we had all this really wonderful and humbled homeowner. But you kind of, after that, you realized how lucky you are. And I would love to somehow write about that experience. My younger brother actually is in Naval Flight School right now in Pensacola, Florida, and he was in the Merchant Marine Academy before, about a year ago. He graduated and traveled all over the world, and he really saw very similar levels of poverty and dealt with very even crazier conditions than Hurricane Katrina. And I would really, in my own way, in addition to writing underdog stories, I would like to bring those issues to the screen in some day.
And I certainly concur with everything you just said, but this was taking place on American soil, which is just a whole different realm.
Absolutely.
You know, and good for you, because that just shows the testament and the character that you possess. And that says volumes of your trajectory in life. And being at Firestein, where 45% of the students are people of color, more than half are women, and at least a half dozen, I believe, have a disability. And many come from all walks of socioeconomic backgrounds. And that is just something that is certainly very reflective of where we live, New York City, in the community, and how BAFTA is involved and the outcomes, and how you were telling me the other day how when you have these pitch sessions where you talk about different concepts and ideas and executions, and it's great because everyone brings something very much different to the table from their life expertise, what they've studied, how they were brought up. And that's invaluable as a creative person.
It's true. I'm really very fortunate. Both times I've been in school at Columbia College Chicago and then now again at Firestein, and I've been surrounded by really the most talented and supportive classmates that I could ever ask for. At Firestein, though, it's particularly another ballgame, and it's very interesting since most of my classmates, as you said, come from various backgrounds and are of different in races or are members of the LGBT community or have a disability, amongst other things. Others have really traveled the globe, and we just sit there during our sessions, and the concepts and the premises that people are bringing to the table because of their experiences. The minute we graduate, I guarantee you, thank goodness for Moonlight for paving the way, and movies like Moonlight and Hidden Figures paving the way, since Hollywood and the New York film scene and the Toronto film scene and the British film scene better get prepared, because there's going to be a lot more where that came from.
You know what's great about living in this area? And I've said this so many times throughout my career in radio, certainly working in the New York City area and New York City, more importantly, for 20 plus years, is that every time you walk down a street, there's an opportunity to just be a sponge and just observe, whether it's something you want to write about, something I want to talk about on the air, or something maybe for a movie script, a documentary, et cetera. And it's just an endless array of opportunity and such a colorful five-borough, you know, sometimes a Mayberry, sometimes a place of pandemonium, but there's always something exciting and something interesting for some particular niche of audience available.
Absolutely. It's a very colorful city. Of course, at this point in my life, I've lived in both New York, LA, and Chicago. So I do pros and cons lists in my head all the time, and I especially analyze the characters. And New York is definitely the most animated of the bunch. And I say this as a born and in a way, since my parents were New Yorkers.
In a positive way.
Definitely positive way, bred New Yorker, or with love. the people you meet, I can tell you right now, about like 2 years ago, I was doing freelance on film sets, and some of the people that you would encounter, wow, they would make great supporting characters someday.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. There's no shortage of that. I mean, you know, walk 3 or 4 blocks and you can sign some people up.
Definitely. There's something about the wit of New York, the bluntness.
Yeah. The bluntness, absolutely.
Definitely the bluntness. The ability to, which I guess is what makes New York more different than any city, the idea that you're not really caught up in an impression of yourself. You feel like an openness to be loud and colorful definitely adds to a certain vibrancy.
Shannon and Ryan, we touched on this a bit, and it's come out in a few different questions and answers that you provide, but what is your dream job and or product and or concept and project, I should say?
I'm still figuring that out, and especially
Aren't we all?
And especially being a student, I'm in a very fortunate place where I can, for the second time in sort of a rebirth, kind of figure that out and learn new skills and obviously allow myself to grow before I make any rush into any decision and keep an open mind, obviously. But as I had said before, writing was my first love in film. Writing for film, I should say, was my first love. And I'm now a producing major. So I would really love to be like that combination of like a writer, producer. I admire so many of the triple threats, some who I've been fortunate to work for when I was out in LA, especially. I would love to do something like that. I also have a great passion for, if I can't write my own scripts, I want to somehow be working with scripts in some way. And one of that ways is development, which is a lot of what I was doing when I was out in LA, which I've described before, with the various responsibilities that I was doing. But it'd be cool to do it in like a huge story department at like Disney or Imagine Entertainment. That would be my dream.
That's exactly where I was thinking. So if you got a call from Pixar or Disney, you would be over the moon, I imagine.
I would be over the moon, and there would be a plane ticket probably booked the next day.
Okay, all right. So we got our priorities straight. At least, to get enough pocket change to do your own concepts down the road as well.
Definitely. That would be the absolute.
Now, do you find that as a person, obviously with a disability, and as a woman as well, that there is even more for yourself to prove?
Absolutely. A mentor of mine once said about 3 years ago that people are, because I remember at the time I was trying to figure out if I wasn't getting hired because of my disability or if it was something else that I was doing. And he said something really great to me that I've never really forgot, which was people are afraid of what they don't understand. And in my experiences, that's always been the case. Even when I was back at high school, people didn't want to accommodate my disability and when I was asking for something as simple as study guides because they didn't want to go through those additional steps of understanding how my disability worked, or why I couldn't hear what I was hearing versus what I could, or go that step in giving me those resources because it would be more time. And it was
more work for them.
Definitely.
Too bad.
And it was the same thing when I was in the workplace, especially when I can't just come back to New York and was actually hired and no longer interning. They didn't want to go through that step because they didn't understand it and they were afraid of giving it the time really to figure itself out in letting me use that equipment. So definitely there's a lot more pressure both as a woman and as a person with disabilities. I mean, women really are very much, especially in the directing field in film right now, and television to a capacity as well.
So underrepresented.
So represented. And the people of disabilities behind the scenes, Real Abilities opened my eyes last week just to the amount of talent that's there. Obviously, we're very fortunate that Speechless and Switched at Birth are on the air. But there's so much more, really, that could be done. So there's definitely so much room that we have to evolve.
Shanda Ryan's my guest, and we just have a few more moments. And I just want to ask you something finally. That there was a moment that I tell this and share a story with colleges and schools all over about the first time it was abundantly clear that I had a disability and was doing my first triathlon attempt. But more importantly, I realized I had a disability, but the lesson I walked away with was how resilient I can become, especially on the fly. Was there any one point in your life, an epiphany where you realized, wow, I do have a disability that impacts me, but you know what? It is what it is, and I got to roll with it.
My dad always had a saying that I repeat to myself this day, that it's not what happens to you, it's how you handle it that makes the person. So I think having grown up in a house where that was very much the philosophy and his lesson to my brother and I was what really kind of shaped me to be able to handle it. Since being as young as I was, growing up with a hearing impairment, an inability to actually like play sports and whatnot, it wasn't a very easy childhood. to say the least, I was able to make it work.
Then the reality is, who does have an easy childhood? And what is an easy childhood, right? We all go through these awkward stages. It's just part of life. It's one of the earliest chapters. Unfortunately, you don't have the history to tap in. Oh, I know it's going to get better, et cetera. And that's just one of those things that you hope that good parents help pave the way, which your parents certainly have. And they must be incredibly proud of you, certainly.
So proud. I think faith and hope also have a lot to do with that as well. Even now as an adult, you want to think things get easier when you're growing up and you're never going to have to deal with these sorts of issues that you deal with when you're a child, especially one with a physical or invisible disability or really of any sort of minority sort of status in a way that's going to vanish, and it doesn't. But you have to find ways to make it work. I wasn't getting hired, so because I was having a problem with a certain in device that I couldn't master because of my disability, so I went out and found a way to do that. I realized I had more that I needed to learn and missed creating. I wasn't creating just a couple months before coming
and
back.
And no one should be afforded that opportunity to miss out on anything. That's
definitely
for sure. And going back to like
reason
mantras,
I'm back at grad school.
Exactly. My mantra is my difference makes me stronger. And that applies for anybody who has a disability. I say we all have disabilities, whether apparent or perceived. You know, it's how we think, how we talk, how we live our lives. But, you know, we all have challenges and hurdles in life. And it's how we act and makes us more resilient. And the fact that there are organizations like BAFTA, you know, that BAFTA New York has recently instituted the BAFTA New York Woman of Her Word Disability Scholarship, which we mentioned before, which is specifically reserved for a student with a disability, hence your presence here today, Shannon Ryan, and is awarded through the support of Michelle Spitz of Woman of Her Word. And it gives great opportunity because people realize that, you know, there's so much more our government could be doing. But we can't wait for our government to come. You know, we're just holding our breath to see what the vote's going to be today on Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. But I digress. But it's more importantly about giving anybody, children, kids, young adults, undergrads, graduate students, opportunity, whether it's in the arts program, sciences, technology, et cetera, because everyone should be afforded that time and opportunity.
Absolutely. I think if there's any positive that can be found and shining light, beacon shining light that could be found in our current political climate, it's the fact that it's inspired people to want to act, to want to write, to want to create, to want to fight for those who really don't have the voice themselves to do it, which I think is absolutely fantastic.
What excites you the most about film school?
Honestly, everything. same with film, everything.
That's great. That's great. Thank you so much, Shannon Ryan, for your time and for sharing things that, you know, sometimes are not that easy to talk about. Not everybody can come in here and be an open book. I'm an open book, and and I do that so other people can benefit, because when I was younger, I didn't have someone come to my school, my college, my radio station, say, well, this is what most likely it's going to entail, your workplace or your collegiate life, life in general. There are people out there who just don't know how to act. Like, people don't know how to act at funerals or viewings, et cetera. And dealing with a disability is no different. So I applaud you on every level, and I know you're going to be quite successful.
That's very sweet of you to say. Thank you so much. And really, thank you for this magnificent opportunity.
Be well, my dear. So, Chuck Barris, you're going to be missed. My name's Mark Farrell. If you want me to speak at your college, school, corporation, etc., check out me at markfarrellmotivation.com. You can always email me at mark@markfarrellmotivation.com. Great news about the Supremes. Great, great news. I love the fact that they rule that schools must provide more opportunities for students with disabilities. If you miss any part of this broadcast, make sure you go on the Insight page and you can find the archive to this. Have a great day, and we wish spring really arrives. My name is Mark Farrell. Thank you so much for your time. Enjoy. Have a great day. See you. Bye.